We enter into thy presence to worship you in spirit and in truth. Realization that out of thy omnipotent wisdom, thy omniscience comes unto us the knowledge of things. That you promised us that thy spirit to our remembrance will lead us to the knowledge of all things. We pray as we survey the situations that surround us that we shall understand that thou art God the sovereign. There rests upon us a basic responsibility as thy children identified by thee in the earth to understand and know all that we should concerning this environment you have placed us in, to find our relationship as you've instructed us to. Instead to show ourselves approved unto thee, workmen that needeth not to be ashamed. Rightly divided in the scripture. We pray, our Father, that you shall cause us to search and to know, and that you cause us to understand our relationship to the pageantry of time, for the majestic purposes which you are going to bring to pass and complete the earth, for that which you have wrought in thy own atonement and the manifestation of thy covenant keeping. And now through thy household and thy children, waiting the final manifestation of thy glory for the great next turn of events in human history. So as we commit ourselves to thy hand, thy will be done. We pray for the great nations of thy kingdom, for the great spiritual center of thy kingdom, thy church, for the race that you have established in the earth that it might fulfill its responsibility with dignity, lifting up thy standards to thy glory. We commit ourselves into thy hand, praying as you taught us to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. And we ask it. Amen. As we turn tonight to the second message that relates to the antiquity of our continent and things that have taken place in this, our homeland's part of the earth, to talk to you again upon prehistoric America and some of the things that are essential for us to know. Never has there been a period in history when men have been as blessed with the results of research, with the strange inquisitiveness that God has placed within us to cause us to search out and to know, out of which has produced the great areas of our modern science and archaeology, in its probing study of everything that is related to man and the origin of races, in its basic concepts and patterns that we have been searching, seeking for knowledge. We've watched the emerging concepts of anthropology, having added to it fact to replace theory. And out of the ethnic studies of the peoples of the earth, we find again that the leading areas of such investigation repose upon your race. There is more known about the earth today than has ever been known about it in any age of human history. There is more known tonight about the pattern of events that have proceeded even our own race upon the earth than has ever been known before. But today, how few are discussing and how few are researching out of these factors for their own knowledge outside of the research scientists themselves. How much today is being done to confuse in the mind of the student inside of our colleges a true knowledge of the things that have gone before? And strange substitutes that are established in the earth to replace the areas of truth as the Lord has willed and delivered this truth unto his people. So as we turn tonight to the subject of prehistoric America, we would go back, way back, back to the position that follows the first to second verses of the book of Genesis. The first and second verses of the book of Genesis, as you know, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And in the second verse, the earth is without form and void, darkness upon the face of the deep. And of course, that famous fourth chapter of the book of Jeremiah explains all that transpired at this particular point of history. And it's brought back to the remembrance of Jeremiah, because Jeremiah, like you, was there, but you do not have it brought to your remembrance except as now through the words of the Scripture. Or through the background of record now made known, these things form an image picture in your mind. But I point out to you that Jeremiah, because he was a child of the Eternal Father, like those that make up the household of God, and for this purpose of unveiling in his ministry as a prophet, was able to record what transpired as it was brought back to his remembrance. And thus he tells about the great catastrophe that shook the earth and did that in the period of time between the first and second verses of the book of Genesis. In the book of Jeremiah, you read these words, "For I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens had no light. Behold, mountains had trembled, and hills had moved. Behold, there was no man, and all the birds of the heaven had fled. Behold, the great fruitful places were a wilderness, and all the cities were broken down, swallowed up by the wilderness. and by the catastrophes of the presence of Yahweh and his anger. For thus saith Yahweh, the whole land is desolate, but I will not make a full end. Thus did the earth war, and the heavens became black. And he said, he beheld this thing that God had purposed, and would not repent, nor would he turn back from that which he had done, as he brought this judgment on them that had been thus spoiled. Isaiah tells us, as does the psalmist, about situations much similar to this, but in the enveloping picture that is here described by Jeremiah, he tells about how the earth had been populated, had great cities, it had great civilizations. So before the beginning of the record of what we call our Bible history, recorded by Moses, starting with the book of Genesis, the earth with its civilizations had existed in the ages before. This is well understood. Someone said, how far back was it to this period of time that Jeremiah talks about? Well, we would not want to limit the time, but the closest margin of event that you could come to relative to this is beyond 600,000 years ago. The reason why we know this is because this creation that follows this catastrophe is described in the book of Genesis, and the last of this creation was when people were placed upon areas of the earth to repopulate it again, and man and woman were thus made. And these men and women were the Tungus peoples, the original Asiatic stock that covered so much of the earth, and their travels and their migrations, their histories, and the radiocarbon as to the time elements of their fossils, and the carbon patterns of their furniture, and the carbon, the fluorine replacement that results in this test prove that we have 600,000 years of the wanderings of these people. Again, we can quote Ivar Lissner and his writings, and that of many other anthropologists, field researchers who have done exceedingly excellent work in this matter, and prove that these Tungus men of that creation moved across the face of the earth. They came down out of the high steppes. They were known to have moved down into Mesopotamia, even down into Africa and back. They moved out over the great areas that are beneath the Pacific Ocean. What a continent has now disappeared. They, even in time, in parts of them, had moved across this portion of the earth. And they had traveled down across the North America, Central America, and South America. The Tungus man of that creation existed after the thing which was described here by the writings of Jeremiah. Now, I point out then that when we deal with antiquity, this is supported, as we've brought out in other messages, we have demonstrated that there are evidences of human society, of artifacts, of ceramics, and of weapons that were on the earth over 1.5 million years ago, and if we were to accept some of the evaluations of those that want to put the Precambrian seas 1.5 billion years ago, then we can say that there was still man on the earth that painted, that made weapons, that had a culture even before the catastrophes of that time. And without doubt, the Precambrian seas were catastrophe enough, and the uplifts and achieved patterns that followed to have almost exterminated, if not completely, the peoples of earth between what we have in the record of the first and second verses of Genesis. So as we talk about prehistory, we must be talking about prehistory as recorded in the expanse of our own race, or shall we say prehistory of the last 7 or 8,000 years. So that which precedes the history which we have as recorded documents, scrolls, and manuscripts is referred to as prehistoric. But it is not prehistoric to the peoples that were dwelling during these periods of time, because they have their history and they have their records, and it is important for us to understand some of these things. I have been noting, as we have been correlating and confronting the ancient traditions and the records of the oldest and most ancient of the doctrines of ancient India, its history and its background, the antiquity of the ancient patterns of history out of the ancient Qin peoples of China, and also the bordering Chinese nations along the Pacific Ocean. It's rather interesting to note also the background history of the peoples in Japan, of Tahiti, and of Samoa, and the history that accompanies the island like Easter Island, and its strange background that ties into ancient past. When all these patterns are correlated, and their images and symbols and their worship and their tradition are told, you get one tremendous story of historical events that run in a continuity that runs over several 100,000 years, but comes, as we come closer to our own time, to more complete and more exactness within the pattern of its history. As we mentioned to you last Sunday evening, we have now established that the civilizations, for instance, just 21 miles from Mexico City, though they covered many hundreds of square miles, we have here at this area great well shafts now down that go down 26 feet, go down 83 feet, go down 145 feet to civilizations. And these civilizations, respectively, 11,500 years, 60,000 years, and 200,000 years. And 200,000 years ago, there were cities, and there were cultures, and they were writing, and they had architecture. And when we point these things out, we're talking now about prehistoric America. We're talking about things that transpired before your time and have been interdispersed with ice ages and catastrophes. But still, my friends, the evidence, remnants of this still exist. There has no catastrophe befallen the earth since the catastrophe that enveloped it before the second verse of the book of Genesis. There is no catastrophe that has overwhelmed the earth that has wiped out all its people since that time. There have been catastrophes that hit some parts of the earth and did not hit other parts of it. Oh, of course, there's always the Bible student who said, what about the flood of Noah? Everybody drowned on the earth at that time. No, everybody in that country. The word, the Hebrew, is Arach, so that place drowned, but not all over the earth. The upper high Carian basin, high up in the Asiatic mountains and steppes, where your race had the largest part of its population and from whence it had migrated, and in the design to destroy it, the enemies of your race were committing violations of divine law, integrating, absorbing, and taking by violence, and led by satanic and Luciferian forces. We are told that there were even monsters and giants in those days because of the intermingling of these fallen Nephilim and the sons of men described in the book of Genesis. And therefore, to preserve the last of this family of purity, Noah had been told to prepare the ark where it seemed so preposterous in that high-stepped land, way up where there was no great seas, and where the waters were subterranean, and where even the seas that later were to be there were subterranean. And in this instance, he did not know that he was over vast seas. Only small streams crossed that plain until the hour of the flood. But I want to point out something to you about the flood. The flood was in that place, Arach. It was no place else. And that's one of the reasons why the catastrophe in which Noah and his wife and his sons and their wives were preserved, which started out one of the purest strains of the white race again, and the Shemite line from which every person in this room has descended, had its point of origin with the offspring of Noah. However, we had tall, strong white men at that very time who, at the time of that flood, were not at all living in that area, but were in other parts of the earth. We can point this out because it is quite historic concerning this, for sons of Seth and peoples of the household of Seth had already, many of them, migrated and had not been touched by the impact of the events of that flood. For instance, down in the land that was so vital to the history of your race, the land of Egypt, where down in ancient Egypt the great city of On was built and the great and mighty pyramid, which was built by Job and Enoch. Job and Enoch were already resident and had built long before the flood the great city of On. And the flood did not affect Egypt at any time. And the peoples of Egypt were still there when Joseph went down to Egypt, or when Abraham preceding Joseph went into Egypt, showing that the flood did not touch the Egyptians. Now, there were great catastrophes that affected the continents that surround this present continent, some of which are long since disappeared beneath the waters of the sea. But among the oldest pattern of history were the peoples that had built the great temples of the Yucatan. We have some 2,000 years of very minute Mayan history, but we have history that precedes it and temples that are of antiquity that go far back beyond that. So far back go some of these temples of antiquity of the Mayan and the pre-Incan, that 15,000 years ago the pre-Incan temples were built that later the Incan were to inhabit. But I point out to you that the Mayas have no record whatsoever of any flood covering North America. No record of any flood covering the Central American lands or of South America as a flood that wiped out all society, civilization, and so forth. So the oldest records of the Mayan, the Maya calendar, show no such flood. Also, something rather interesting about the ancient Maya. They have all the planets and all the progression of the stars. They were great mathematicians, and they had tremendous measures of the sky, but they didn't have the planet Venus in their solar system at the time that they made their original calendars. I think this is rather significant because they put their the entrance of Venus in their calendar somewhere around 1470 to 1450 B.C. It all depends on how we measure the decan to find the exactness of the measuring point of the Mayan calendar. In other words, they show Venus coming into our solar system about that time, and they show that it came in, and with it was accompanying catastrophes, but the catastrophes did not affect them because they did not know about these catastrophes at that time. They only knew that the sky above them became filled with dust and debris, that the sky became red, and the sun was shining massive and red, and they thought that the mighty gods of the sun were about to be angry and bring another catastrophe upon their ancient land, as had swept away a whole continent and swallowed it up in the fire in the past. It was not until white men arrived who came by ships into the Caribbean and went into the Yucatan and were received as the sons of Quetzal, the Quichi, the great god of light from the sky. And when the sons of the god of light arrived, they were hailed as the children of the god of light, and they hoped that the hour had come that would turn the serpent from the catastrophes that had passed. Thus it was when they arrived, who were these people? They were the children of Manasseh that, according to the scriptures, had gone to sea in ships, and the ships of Dan. And the ships of Dan were the Phoenician ships, and they had sailed across the ocean and into the Caribbean, and here they had landed, and they brought with them the whole story of every biblical account from the records of Moses and the thinking of Job on up until the time of the Exodus, which they had made about 800 B.C., In fact, they brought to the peoples of the Maya the story of the flood, but in Mayan record, the flood was not in their land. It was some far distant place to the north or to the east, but not there. And so they did not have any record of the flood in their history, but the flood they have a record of is happening someplace else in the earth. More than this, they have the whole story of these sons of Quetzal who had come to earth, these tall Quichi, these white men who were the children of the eternal God, and the God whose battles had been fought in the skies that had affected the background of their history. Thus it was the tradition of the peoples among the Mayas had all of these records. And it was not many years before the administration over all the ancient Mayan cities was that of the white Israelite, which was none other than Manasseh, or a portion of the tribe of Manasseh. Of course, the great majority of the tribe had not yet sailed. The majority of the tribe was in the migrations, went through the captivities that took place in the days when the Assyrians captured the northern 10 tribes of Israel, and that's why the Ephraim and Manasseh, the two descendant great tribal houses of the house of Joseph, finally found themselves settled in the Isles of Britain and in that area of Europe, and out of them have come the Anglo-Saxon peoples, of which your heritage and your language is so much an affinity. However, a part of your race, the Manassehites, a portion of them had already sailed, already were established in this country. How far back, my friends? They were here 2,700 years ago. But this is not prehistory. It is only prehistory to the entrance of the white man into this continent. When we talk about the things that are prehistory, however, I might turn to the National Geographic's Book of Indian Life in America, and it points out that 39,000 years ago, Indians were settling in this country, which Indians, of course, were Asiatics, and people from the steppes and Mongols that were coming across the land bridge. But they said that they followed what was the dispersion of the glaciers, which were now melting. The end of the last glacial age was about 40,000 years ago, as the receding ice backed up and made possible crossing the land bridges that had not yet been broken down between Alaska and Siberia at that strait. However, there had been a sinking of a continent, and the sinking of this continent also took place after the major portion of this glacial age. Now we point out that some of these people, therefore, didn't follow the scientific declaration made today by those that were bringing them all across the land bridge, but some of them had been peoples that came out of that continent that had submerged. The history of that is probably the most best-prepared history that the world possesses of antediluvian record. Because from India, from Japan, from China, from the areas of tradition here in this continent, and from the relationship to it, to the most ancient antiquity of its temples, we have a sunken continent from which people emerged to this one. We point out that they came before it collapsed, and some of them survived. Masses of them were lost. The approximate population lost in the sinking of that continent was about 65 million people. So you have an idea about the size of that catastrophe as the number of factors and its spread were a part of the records of the ancients in these other surrounding areas. Now we point out to you ice ages. Let's turn for a moment over to the book of Job. Here in the book of Job, God speaks to Job, and he's already been telling Job, listen, you're a lot older than you think. You were with me when a lot of things transpired, but now you're a man, and I'm telling you to tighten your belt and think and give me answers now. And when you can't answer it, I'll bring it to your remembrance. Where were you, for instance, when the hoary frosts came out of the heavens and the very ocean surfaces and the faces of the deep were frozen? Where were you also when the great ice ages took place? Tell me now, Job. You don't remember because you weren't there. You were up here, but you observed it. Now, the ice ages did take place, and they took place exactly, my friends, upon the same kind of incident as is recorded for catastrophe by the Mayas, and they recorded about 1450 to 60 B.C. Now, you say, what is this? This was the coming of a great astronomical body. Like a mighty comet out of the sky, it was called the Sword of the Lord. It swept down and it picked up masses of water and material in its attraction tail. It even rocked the earth in that period of time and took great masses of it into the sky. And out in the cold of outer space, the water and the masses turned to ice, and they fell back to the earth to inundate the earth with an ice age that covered the north half of the North American continent all the way to the Arctic. It entrapped, as you know, the mammoths that were grazing there upon the tundras. One moment they were eating the grass, and the next moment they were buried in ice and snow as the falling masses lifted by the comet's tail, a scourge of judgment fell upon the earth. This catastrophe also had affected whole portions of the various parts of the earth, and the record of the coming of this sword is a part of the ancient story that the Toltecs as well as the Mayans have, and the peoples of India have, and also the ancient Chin peoples describe. So we have this pattern. Did you know that the time of 1450 to 1460 to 1450 B.C., on back to the approximate measure, possibly only the Deccan calendar measure difference will change this. They talk about the coming of this new great wanderer who came into our sky. The wanderers are planets. They're the only ones that change or move. All the rest of the stars move in their progression. A Mayan wanderer was a planet. A Indian wanderer was a planet. A Chinese wanderer was a planet. And so they had one planet that they now add to their sidereal system, and that was the planet Venus. Now, some said this isn't possible, but it not only is possible, but it is one of the things that did transpire. And you know what happened at the time that this planet came in? It was at that time that the judgments and catastrophes that hit Egypt at the time of the Exodus. And the debris that filled the sky and the conditions of dust and particles in the stratosphere that for 40 years it was neither light nor dark as described in the scriptures is supported by the accounts of the ancient Maya when the sun god was angry and the sky was red and the sky was the blazing red all day long of the sun god whom they feared. Now, let me point out to you that within the scope of this measure, no sooner had they the background of the biblical record of your race than they add that record to their background and their traditions, but they separate it from what had gone before. So you see, they had no flood down there. Nothing had ever bothered them because the flood period of history was bracketed between greater catastrophes for them that had occurred 15,000 years before, 11,500 years before, and of course these catastrophes they had great record of. One of the most amazing things that I find in the tradition of prehistoric America and found in the tradition of its peoples are the great legends of things that had gone before, tied in the background of their religion and tied in the tremendous artifacts, as we told you, far up at Tehuantepec, 13,600 feet above the sea level is the great temple and the great walls of Tehuantepec. Built 15,000 years ago, occupied later by the Incas, but they tell their story. And the story they tell is of great upheaval. In fact, my friends, there were no Andes Mountains then, nor were the High Sierras in their present position. They're up with came at the time of the sinking of great land masses that were to the westward. And with this great upheaval and with the sinking of land masses and the situations that took place, they said the earth rocked to and fro, that mountains and hills jumped up and down, and great mountains arose and lifted their city to the sky. And if you go down to the Mata Grosso, you'll find that the great masses of the black basalt rock so fit together, 20-some-odd tons to on up to 80 tons apiece, and you can't put a piece of paper between them. That great masonry that you find on top of that mountain has one relationship to the masonry on the bottom, is that they came from the same place, and at one time they were connected together. But this mighty upwind had taken and lifted a whole city, vast plateau, and all that was on it high up into the sky. And as we told you in the past, the finding of the cities on the northern ends of the Andes that were lifted up about 11,500 years ago in their final lifting, sheared off half the city below the basalt cliff, the other half above the top of the mountain, and radiocarbon of the furniture and the debris that was buried underneath the rocks and the lime proved that it happened 11,500 years ago. We don't have any more room anymore for ignorant clergy or ignorant people that want to start everybody out with Adam and say that nobody lived on the face of the earth before 4,000 or 6,000 years ago, when they don't even know that there's an error even in chronology that was purposely placed there to throw off the date of Messiah, and that Adam's exodus was actually 7,400 years ago or 5,400 years before the birth of Christ. Your race with a special destiny has before it in a tremendous purpose which God will still bring to pass with it, but its background history goes back to 7,400 years ago approximately, and that's all. But as to the earth with its peoples, there have been here for thousands upon thousands of years. There have been catastrophes and upheavals, but they're all tied together to one great common story. What happens to a planet like Earth? What creates the vast catastrophes? What makes the great shifts? What forces are set in motion? Or what causes these things to happen? And out of a God of graciousness and goodness and with wisdom and knowledge and understanding and creative power, with whom not even a sparrow falls that doesn't come within the subconscious pattern of his eternal omniscience, how then could catastrophes affect great continents, wipe out 65 million at a single sweep? How could this happen? Because, my friends, this was the theater of the universe. The situations and what was transpiring here was a great focal point for a vast panorama of tremendous impact. For there had been a war in the heavens, and the earth had become the theater of the war in the heavens and the scenes of its final and vast pattern of event. For instance, I am always interested in the great Matavara that the ancient peoples of India talk about. And they talk both about areas of the origin of some of their peoples, but they talk about the knowledge and tradition and how some of the peoples of India had come from the land beneath the waters, the land of Ramu. Now, we've mentioned that before because among some of the Hindu early kingdoms of India, they refer to the fact that the Maya kingdom, and you know there was a Maya kingdom in India as well, and their ruler was called Ramu, or Ra, which is king or ruler of Mu, or king of the sun land. Well, you see, that ancient land was known as the land of the sun. Now, that didn't just mean that the people themselves worshipped the sun as a god, but it was the land of the sun, and an emperor was a son of the empire of the sun. Now, in this instance, they worshipped at one time the mighty god of light. And he had a multitude of names, and of course he was a white god, and they talk about him. And Quetzal was the word among both Inca as well as Maya for the white god. It even comes down into later Aztec's history. And then when they change it to Quetzalcoatl, they have changed it from the great god, symbolized as the flying eagle, the great bird of the sky, but naturally he is only the symbol of a god who is a white man or a white god. And Quetzal means white god. Some have thought that there was an ancient white king that ruled 39,000 years ago, because they have the history both in Aztecs as well as among the Quechi, which actually the Quechi were Manasseites, and this was the name that was given unto them because the Quechi were supposed to be the name for the sons of Quetzal. And Quetzal is the serpent, and the transposition of the serpent to a flying serpent ruling in the sky was what transpires as a Luciferian attack upon the declaration of one and a true living God. If you go down to the great mountain temples, or to Atan and so forth inside of Mexico, you'll discover there that where its great pyramid temples have been built, you'll see that around its lintels there is now a flying serpent, a winged serpent. And this winged serpent has replaced what was older, the great deity of light and the great bird coming out of the sky bearing the light. This also is symbolical as the emblem of the phoenix bird, and it was a symbol of eternal life and resurrection, of the bird of the spirit, of the indestructible one, of the God of the sky, whose children of light were the sons of light, or Quetzi, or the children of Quetzal. And so when the tribe of Manasseh made part of its arrival there, automatically they said, well, here they are, the sons of Quetzal, the Quetzi. You remember what they said about your race when it first came down to Egypt? The cry of the priests of Egypt, because they had the ancient records of Paras and how they had traveled across the continents of Africa from the sinking continent to the eastward when it went down, and how they looked forward again to the sons of Yahweh Phutah, who is the God of light. And so they called you the children of Osiris, the soul of light, or the soul of Ra, which also is the word for the sun. So your race was always known as the children of Osiris, the Lord of light and resurrection, the race of deity in the earth. I point out to you that, therefore, the tremendous spectacle which we find a part of even in the great flowing picture pattern of the solid monoliths of thousands of years ago. We have its story even hidden in the traditions of ancient Japan concerning what happened when the land sank and the Sumare were the surviving royalty of that island. And out of the records which we find, the Vedas or the great sages of the Aryan society that brought back so much of the tradition story of ancient India. Well, they said there came hurtling out of the sky like the meteors, moving stars, the great fleets. Amelotelos, the serpent-feathered peacock, or the peacock-feathered serpent. And in this story, they said, behold, his ships came sweeping out of the sky, hurtling like meteors before the ships of light. For Indra had come out of his place in the heavens. He had pursued the serpent one, and the serpent one made his haven in the earth. And behold, the ships of light did pass over the ships of Melakalos. And the great Manavera had been fought in the sky, and many of them arrived crippled and wounded in the earth. This is ancient Indian records. You know what they're talking about? They're talking about a battle between Lucifer and the eternal God. And the difference is that Indra was a god of light. He also was the great god of the outer universe, and the feathered serpent, Melakalos, was none other than the name which they had bestowed upon Lucifer, who with his ships had taken the earth for his haven. Listen. I read over here in the writings of the psalmist some rather interesting things. Behold, it talks about the fact in my distress I called upon the Lord. He wanted to know what this great vision was, for the sorrows of death seemed to be encompassing with pressure. And he beheld how the earth shook and trembled in its foundations, and the hills were moved, mountains rose up and down. And there was great smoke, and he saw here that there was a devouring fire that came forth from one of the beings involved in this catastrophe, and it says that God Yahweh bowed the heavens and he came down and the darkness was under his feet. And we find here that one did ride upon the symbol of the ship of a cherub, and he did fly with the wings of the wind, and he made darkness his secret place, and his pavilion round about were dark waters and thick clouds. Now we discover here that Yahweh thundered out of his highest heavens, and with his voice came hailstones, coals of fire, a shaking earth, disappearing land. You say, what's this all about? Well, if you have read Kon-Tiki or Kyu-Chu, you'll discover that out there on Easter Island, the remnant of an ancient and old civilization whose monoliths stick up out of the sea, and where you see the images of great gods and the background of things past, and great walls disappear off of that island and go down into the sea. And since that time, there has been a lot of investigation of the bottom of the ocean, and these walls, like the walls of China, go out to sunken cities beneath the waters of the Pacific. And you will note that investigation shows that sands that have strange and green substance called trinitite, we gave it that name after we did the same thing down in Algamargo. when we were experimenting in Algamargo, when we started to create our first nuclear fission explosions, the sands were fused together like volcanic glass and turned green. And they were radioactive, and they gave it a name, trinitite. And out there on the isles of Easter Island is trinitite. There are the remnants of radioactive materials. Isotopes formed not because they were natural carriers of uranium. They didn't have uranium-235 or 238. They were not pitch blend. They were not any other known ore of radium. They were just fused radioactive particles, substances that had been fused together by terrific atomic explosions that had taken place sometime in the ancient past over that great continent which now sank beneath the waters and left a few of its high spots. And when you turn over here to the psalmist with vision and inspiration was given the story of what had transpired and what had happened to areas of the earth in the antiquities of ancient yesterday. You say, how did this war take place? Well, in the rebellion against the Most High God, against your family, and against His administration of the universe, all the forces and the cunning and the wisdom and the darkness was changed to perversion and judgment. And Lucifer fought a war against Michael. What a spectacle our ancient Aryan forebears describe out of the traditions of India, out of the backgrounds of Asia, as they talk about these great ships that came hurtling out of the sky, like meteors, and behind them the great ships of light in fast pursuit, until the darkness makes earth its hiding place. And the sons of light do not pursue it to earth, but fly over it to see that it stays here, according to the ancient tradition. In other words, Lucifer was bottled up in earth. No wonder when Michael was railing out against against Lucifer, and when he had followed him in, and the Lord said, stay now, don't destroy him, let him stop here. This is where we'll finish our history with Lucifer. And so in the antiquities of yesterday, something transpired that we see. Anthropologists are trying to discern just exactly what happened. When Columbus arrived, as you remember, he called everybody here Indians. And of course, this was a misnomer that stuck with him since. There is, as we have cited in evidence, that there were two kinds of people, major by distinction, that existed in this continent. In fact, when our race arrived in its final colonization and settling, from the days of Christopher Columbus to John Cabot and to the colonization of this great nation, why we were told that these were red men, but they weren't red men. In fact, the only time they even looked red is when they painted their skins up with ochre, for they were always prone before wars or before battles to color themselves with ochre and to make themselves appear reddish, and they streaked themselves with it. But actually, the Indians of America were a tan race, and there was also white ones, and they fell into these two categories. Some suntan, but not white underneath any clothing they might have. Others that were tan all over all the time. And then there's a strange, peculiar mongrelization, among which is some of the dullest and thickest and least bright of all of the peoples of India, of the Indians, and they have been mixed with Negro blood. And this Negro blood has also had its impact upon peoples out here in the islands of the sea. We point out that out in the Pacific that we have these people very light in color, we have these people that were like tan. And then we have these Negro types that were induced. But how do they come? Well, we are told that in the great battle of the land of the sun, that the people of the land of the sun turned from worship of the great god Quexi and turned to worship the great serpent god. And he had brought with them these dark ones, and they served before them. And he told them, never mind the laws of the sun, but turn to the laws of pleasure and the laws of love. And he started mongrelization and integration and the mixing of Negroes with people. Now, some shunned it, some proud of their race and their heritage. Some of them proud even of the ancient kingdoms they were a part, would not partake in it. But out of it came great dark masses of mingled peoples. Out of it came wild orgies. Out of it came the turn of the most evil of processes, even the mutation of race, even the attempt to mutate that race with orgies with animals and animal life. And this bestiality is even condemned in the book of Exodus when God gave Moses his laws, and the pagan policies out of Asia still continued until this was one of the transgressions of Esau. He followed the pagan wife that he bought, and he married to the hill of the satire, the mongrelization and the worship of the half-man, half-goat god that had been a part of Baal worship. It's a rather interesting thing that we note that over these ancient civilizations, and we had pointed out to you that one of these civilizations, some 60,000 years old, a little over, had been occupied by Chinamen. And these Chinamen lived in that part of Asia, not called China then, but they came out of areas north of Peking, had translucent jade ornaments and jewelry to be found no place else on the earth. There's all kinds of jade, dark jade, green jade, but this particular type of the artifacts that were on the arms of these very Chinamen down under this volcanic cap city of 60,000 years ago, the second civilization down, came from only one place, and that was China. And the images that they had were all of Chinese faces and features exactly, even though there are other kinds of Mongols with their high cheekbones. These were very definitely not only Chinese, but they showed this pattern of ancient China. Now in the instances of this, again we find that the traditions that related to the land of the Aztecs in Mexico, those cities were not built by the later Aztecs. They were built by a people more profound than they were. And in the history, we are told that they also were built by the children of Quetzal. So probably the best of the architecture of Mexico had come from the Manasseh growth and spread from its civilization and culture that touched Toltec as well as other civilizations. But I point out to you that in the story which they tell, the story I find borne testimony to from all parts of the earth was that in the Luciferian design, the mongrelization and struggle also emerges violence and trouble. And that actually there was such violations of law that again the ships of the sun come into being. And we're told that out of the sky come the ships of the sun, and the earth rocks, and great pillars of fire reach into the sky. Whole portions of the earth rock and disappear. And we are told that following this, the earth went into great shudders. And there followed this, a whole swallowing up of masses of the land, and it went down, they said, in the lake of fire. The more intelligent conquering of what transpired was that there had been nuclear war. There had been war between great fleets that had come in from the outside against the evil of Lucifer's power, because he was causing all the earth to transgress, including this great continent. And because of this catastrophe, why, there was not only great earthquakes and water rushed into volcanic areas, and great fires came forth, that whole volcanic activity started, and masses of land disappeared in flaming fire and steam, and then drowned out in the water of its submergence. These smoldering volcanoes still work upon the floor of the Pacific, and every once in a while they build up a new island to help reconstruct the continent again that has gone down so far before. Even the Hawaiian Islands are a part of this type of volcanic activity, but other islands are still a part of the basalts of a land that sank beneath the waters, once its high peaks, now but islands inside the sea. We point out then that the great catastrophes that swept the pre-Adamic and ancient world and swept prehistoric America came from the violation of divine law, from the war of Lucifer against God and the resulting catastrophes of any place he came to and cursed. And intermingling of people with the Negroids, which he brought with him out of the Milky Way, and which were a part of his rebellion, probably couldn't help it because they were underneath his control and power and under the part of the universe which had rebelled. But anyhow, whether they did or didn't, they might have had some area of resistance, and there may be many of them still back in the continents and planets from which they have come that did not, but this bunch fell. And with that fall, they degenerated intensely, even as to their own abilities and to their own knowledge. As we said to you about in Humboldt, the great student of anthropology and archaeology who's made his study all over the earth, and I am convinced that no area of the earth have savages emerging, growing, and developing. All of these savages have degenerated and fallen from great civilizations. They have turned because of catastrophes that enveloped their cities and lands, cut them off from their technology, or in their forced nomadic conditions, the ones that had survived have gone into a wild state and have degenerated. He said, the evidences of the civilizations that are extinct in South America prove that their forebears were much smarter than any of the remnants that we now find in its jungles. And, of course, the Negroes had gone down and degenerated until bestiality became their part, until some of them almost became as missing links because of their violations of divine law. This also happened out in the Philippines. There are some Filipinos with tails. Now, this does not mean that all the Filipinos are like this, but some of the more crude tribes had violated patterns of divine law, and this evidence was found not only during the war, but it's a matter of medical record. So I point out again that there takes place throughout the world a lot of strange things. And always it relates back to the same story, always fits in. The tradition of the Indians, the tradition of the ancient civilizations, and even some of their background clearly support this great story. It also supports another great pattern of knowledge. There is no part of the history of the peoples that constitute the ancient civilizations that had them exterminated by the Ice Age. Now let me point out again that we have evidences of violations of divine law among these various races and groups, but we have also covered now, once by ice, and now the receding ice, long since gone because it melted, have left artifacts of people that lived and dwelt and had cities even before the ice inundation had destroyed them. And there are evidences by the symbols that we find in the artifacts that even the pre-glacial period had the impact of satanic processes, and that would be correct, because we have Negroes buried in Kilimanjaro 73,000 years ago and receding ice 40,000 years ago could well have come in that interval. One of the factors that have shown us the pattern of ice ages in both Europe as well as in America now becomes quite clear. It was not, as some said, a gradual increasing cold that swept over the earth. It was an astronomical phenomenon, catastrophe, that suddenly lifted masses of water and ice into the air, and then having frozen this water, dropped back masses of ocean and masses of frozen snow and ice to whole areas and continents were underneath it. And thus the Arctic, as well as the Antarctic regions and the temperate zones had been covered by catastrophe. But let me point this out to you, that glaciers don't move down from the north and recede back to the north. It's just as the glaciers melt, why, it warms up where the ice is now gone. As long as you got this much ice, you're in a deep freeze. And thus the ice, as it melted, it went downhill. And if it was up in the top of high mountains, it went down into the valleys, and into the valleys, and then it traveled down the valleys. But it traveled north just as well as it traveled south, because it always sought a lower level as water and mud produced slickens for the glacier's weight to move, and it followed its weight pressure for least resistance. And today, almost all the glaciers have melted. In fact, in my lifetime, I've watched glaciers in the high Sierras get smaller, and it proves that also there's a difference in the ice pack and even its replenishing by rains and snows. And far up in the Arctic, there's a receding of the ice and there's a gradual melting back and there's a breaking off going on all over close to the Arctic ice packs as the ice recedes. Of course, if all the ice on the face of the earth melted, it wouldn't raise the oceans around the earth an inch. So don't let anyone tell you that it's going to unbalance the earth or start any floods, because there's not enough water and all that ice to do this. But it did produce these catastrophes. It does produce a record of the biblical record being accurate, and it does also show that God several times intervened to bring great judgment on Lucifer's attempt to destroy the peoples, to mongrelize and destroy and mutate everything with filth and with violence, with immorality and depravity. Lucifer's battle, his call for throwing aside the gods, the laws of God, and turn to pleasure and what he calls love, is nothing but to turn to all of the depravity and immorality and degeneration that reduces men to his level. And not satisfied with that, he wants to reduce them in degeneration to bestiality. Let me point out that the great cities of light that had been built in the past, which were but symbols of worship to the one true God, we note now are mutated by Luciferianism. If you were to go into the record of your own race, you will note that you who are the sons and daughters of the Eternal, the children of Adam who come upon the earth to find the remnants of lands beneath the waters and their king title and his people in the Old Testament dwelling everywhere from the plain of Shinar all down through Samaria and even into North Africa. And you find these peoples have no part with anybody that descended from Adam, and they come from generations that were pre-Adamic. And you turn to the 31st chapter of the book of Ezekiel, and you discover how the streams of their races were great, and that's why some of them had such tremendous kingdoms, and how the Sumerians that came from the Tungus man with some 600,000 years of history. No wonder there were a lot of them on the earth. No wonder they had the Assyrian Empire over most of the earth, and most of its peoples were Asiatic, according to the 31st chapter of the book of Ezekiel. And these empires were great in the days when Adam was in Eden, and the Egyptian Empire existed way back along with these others, and you'll find the record of it in the 31st chapter of Ezekiel. You know, the reason why so many people are ignorant is because they never study to find out. A lot of preachers never pay any attention to what's in the Old Testament, and they don't pay too much attention to what's in the New. And the resulting circumstance is that they buy some bedtime story they've been told about everything started with one man back in the periods of Adam, and this is the beginning of these things, but this is not so. We point out that whereas there became degeneration among some and others fell, a great area has resisted this, and there are areas of society that were untouched by it. You know, ever since your race has been on the earth, it's been moving out, occupying, developing, establishing civilization. And this is why even as you go down through the sons of Adam and you come on down through the descendants of Seth, and you'll see how they went out over the face of the earth. Great patriarchs like Enoch and Job and others who came down out of the high steppes and out of the Persian Sea and into the Mesopotamian lands and down into the land of Palestine and into Egypt. All of this is a matter of migrant history, and the record is both biblical as well as historic, as we find them even in secular history with their impact upon the world. We look back over great empires. In fact, we can remember the background of history and what it has to say about some of these empires. Probably the greatest of the rising empires as far as glory and fame was ancient Babylon. Though the great city of Ur, the Chaldees, which was ruled over by Ham, by Nimrod, the descendant of Ham, a white man whose prime minister, as you remember, was the father of Noah, Terah. And it was out of this city that God told Abraham to come out of the city of Ur of the Chaldees. He wanted him to preserve his waistline, to carry out the destiny of the kingdom and your destiny. And he called him thus out. But let us point out to you that this was a great and tremendous city. One of the great wonders of the ancient world was Ur of the Chaldees. And Babylon was another one of these great cities. And the size of ancient Babylon with its walls 15 miles by 15 miles was considered to be a tremendous strength of power. Its outer walls, its inner walls. And we hear about the power of Babylon. But Babylon was a Luciferian-controlled city. Satanic power had taken it over, and the evil offspring of Lucifer that you and I know when we see them running hawk shops as Jews had actually taken over with our evil priesthoods, ancient Babylon. And when Judah and Benjamin were held there captive, they were captive into one of the most powerful and greatest cities of the ancient world. But I want to point out something about it. When Satan had taken over and his children had taken over and amalgamated pagan religions, they now worshipped Baal as the embodiment of the sun. And Baal's temples were set on high hills in pyramid-like temples inside of Babylon, exactly like they built inside of Mexico and when they turned to the perversion of truth. More than this, they had inside of the temples of Baal, they had in there over 12,000 vestal virgins to Baal. These were daughters of the sun, daughters of Baal, daughters of prostitution to the temple, who in their service before Baal were the vestal virgins of Baal. Their high pontiffs ruled under Baal influence, and their great symbols of power manifested the control of even the government of ancient Babylon. And when we point this out, we turn now to great Aztec temples, which having been built upon even greater civilizations before them, they also had now the worship of Quetzalcoatl, now the god serpent. And in this instance, note that he was now given the title of this god of the sun, which was a usurpation of the original theology of the ancient land. And you know what they did? They took at least 30 to 40,000, the Smithsonian Institution's research shows you, National Geographic's volume of these priests of the Aztecs. 30 to 40,000 youth and women were sacrificed every year upon the altars of the Baal gods here. So you got the same devil god down in Babylon and the same devil god here in this country fighting against the patterns of ancient truth. And of course, in the history of your race, Manasseh had already arrived. Manasseh had already influenced civilization in the land that the Aztecs had settled upon. And the Aztecs now had aborted it with the same old evil, and Baalism was raised up. The pictures of the tremendous splendor of all the savagery, of the radiant gold and shimmering symbols of these Aztec gods as they were betrayed by their priests, as they took the captives, almost always white men, as their ancient pictures show, and some of their natives, and they carried them to their altars and slashed open their abdomen and reached in and took out their bleeding heart as a sacrifice to the gods, the pagan gods of Baal. material transferred and existing in this continent. Maybe it existed here ages, as we know, before even Baphlin had ever been considered, but it was the same symbol and the same Bible. It's a rather significant thing that when we look over the antiquity of these areas, that prehistoric America has been occupied and lived in, and searching forces of the darkness and forces of the light have been battling for this continent and the subcontinent and also the areas in between for a period of some thousands of years. No wonder then that when we look back over this history, we find the traditions that we find here in record. The mass sacrifice, the blood sacrifice, the wild orgies, all this is Luciferianism, always the service of the devil, always the worship of a deified serpent, always the mighty God out of the skies. But there's a prophecy that existed among the Quechua, a prophecy that existed among the Toltecs and the Maya, that the day would come when Quetzal of light would return, and he would rejoin his Quechua children the earth. He would bring the mighty hosts of the sky, and again the sky would be filled with the hurtling ships of the serpent god and the god of the sky, and there would be great victory, and the earth would shake, and land surfaces would come up, and mountains would go down. Oh, you say, of course, we don't believe in these superstitious things. Well, I don't know whether we do or not. I was reading the other night in the account of the Lewis and Clark expedition, and just as lately as the Lewis Clark expedition, which they had totally published in 1812, and there was a great earthquake, and a mountain all the way from the Great Lakes to Oklahoma City was just swallowed up in the earth. The Indians were frightened, and there was a great whole line of disturbance can be seen, and you can fly over the area where this great fault suddenly swallowed this whole mountain up. How high a mountain was it? Well, apparently it was about 4,500 feet in the sky because it was a real high mountain in some places. The records and traditions that are told of the Indians, and also the records of a mountain chain that is known of by the southern peoples that's no longer there. There is a map of a portion of the Great Plains areas of Central America that's been, or Central North America, that is carved on the walls of one of the great skyscraper cities of the western Indian of the, not the Pueblos, but in the Cliff Dwellers. And here is this map of a mountain range that goes not too far from their land, and it's all gone. So you see, they do go up and they do go down. And the scripture tells us this. It tells us one of the strange things that's going to take place, that a lot of the water is going to disappear, a lot of land mass is going to come up again. And also in the judgments that fall, the great earthquake ahead is going to just drop some of the portions of the coast of the earth down into the water until one-third of the peoples dwelling along the coast of the earth that are the enemies of the Most High God will find themselves swallowed up in judgment. The stories and the records go hand in hand with a lot of the documents and manuscripts and the records of ancient history, and even on the borderland of your history. And so we discover that the Bible contains its record, and the whole interdispersing record tells us of this great chain of events. We point out that prehistoric America, therefore, was occupied before your race was ever upon the earth. But it's had impact with your race, especially with the household of your own family, since 800 B.C. Of course, we are told about how the Norsemen came over in about the 8th century, and how they settled along the Great Lakes, and they built their forges around the iron ore, and they started to make their great blades and so forth, and how the Asiatic Indians made war against them, and finally they were forced to go tribal, though we have 2 centuries after that, more Norsemen coming over, and the history of Scandinavia tells about the stories and the records brought by the Norsemen of this great land, of powerful savages, of some of them who were tan, and some of them who were painted, and some of them who were dark, and also the story of those that, like unto their own, have languages similar unto theirs, and are light and fair of hair. So those that had come over several hundred years before, they had still the same records, still some of the same words, and had gone into tribal life. Eventually, they attack again upon the second wave of Norsemen, sent them tribal, and thus the Delawares and the Mohicans and the Mohatans and the other great white tribes of Indians that were found here in the northeastern states, and it spread through with the Seneca and the Five Nations until eventually we find them down in the southern parts of the United States. And
Far out of the west, we find the white tribes of the Sioux, the white Cherokee, and so forth. And, of course, the story is always quite understandable. Someone said, where did the white Indians go? Why is it we don't find tribes of the west? You go out and take a look at what's on the plantation today, and it doesn't look white. And no, because the white ones have been absorbed. The white ones wouldn't stay in this condition. The white ones, my friends, were brilliant and valiant. They were not only artisans, and they were creators. They were warriors, but they have been absorbed into the rest of the white race. Someone said, this is terrible. Well, it was not terrible because in this instance, again, they were rejoined under their own people. Because there's only one white race on the face of the earth, and it had one stock through the Adamic race, and even Israel, which means issue, ruling with God, it was perfectly acceptable to Jacob that Joseph marry Asenath, daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On, and that Ephraim and Asher be counted with the rest of the stock of Israel, because she had married into this pure strain of the Sethite race. The separation of centuries had not stopped the background pattern of this people. I point out to you that we find in some areas of the earth that the tracing of history is not as easy to find as it is in the artifact record of even this continent, as now it opens and expands. And so we discover here that here was a land which we were sent into as the sons of God from the beginning. We were sent in with a message and sent in with a destiny. And when God told none other than David standing by his pillar about this great land that he was going to give him, that it was a land he wasn't going to move anymore yet, a great land beyond the waters, and he was standing in Jerusalem then, talked to him about this land, and the prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah knew about it, the land of the myrtle wood and the redwood tree, the land of rivers and the land of blessing. Here the great kingdom of God to emerge in its mighty power in these great and climactic days. Novus Ordo Seculorum. But what a story. The story in its pattern shows the great bulk of war in the sky and war on the earth. It shows even nuclear warfare and warfare with the weapons of dissolving atoms, both from celestial ships and from the earth itself. No wonder then the sinking continent that went down in the Pacific, left upon the seashores, left the continents next to it, to which it was joined, the radioactive isotopes of the great catastrophes of yesterday. And so we know that nuclear war is not new. There's been nuclear war before. How great it was, we do not know. But we know the lands around, the remnants and its artifacts disappeared beneath the floors of the ocean. No wonder we can say a pillar of fire, an umbrella of smoke, and we have been identified as moving into, again, the days of the last days of the end of the age. When we turn to this book specifically doesn't deal with all the patterns of prehistory because the history of our race from Adam to our time and to the days which are just ahead and to the events which we still must complete. In the course of these events, we've been told about geophysical changes, about struggles and battles. In fact, I can tell you right now that you're on the edge of another great manifestation of power. You're going to see the powers of darkness not only fighting you on earth, as already through communism and through all their conspiracy, through the design of, again, Lucifer's Baalism and his design to get you to worship pagan gods or all philosophies, or roll them all together or integrate your race or mongrelize the seed. This is all the same satanic design. And with it would come catastrophe and with it judgment. Only this time the eternal Yahweh said we've reached the end of the measure. The judgment's going to fall on those that purposed for this. It's going to fall on the enemies that have dwelt carelessly among my people. It's going to fall with judgment upon the household of my enemies. And I'm going to send in my ministering spirits, your relatives and of my family, and we're going to gather out a lot of these rascals and just take them away like tares being plucked out of the field. And I'm going to tell you one of the great spectacles that seemed to be so great a spectacle that the last of the warriors of the ancient Japan race saw it. For ancient Japan had fallen into darkness, worshiping the god Pan and worshiping the violations of divine law. But those high races of Mu, the last of them, Sumu Ra, the ruling sons of Mu in that land called Sumare today, have ancient records of the great battle. They tell about the battles in the sky and the same word, Mantabera, the great warfares of the heavens. You know how it's going to end? If you turn to the 12th chapter of Revelation, you would have read some of this too. It tells you here in your Bible about how Michael had fought against your father God and how he has set you in the earth to build his kingdom. And in the midst of your struggle for the earth, the hordes again rise in the sky, on the earth, and come in every direction. And then again there shall be that great spectacle of that majestic flight of the ships of light. the mighty glory of the embodied God of the Son, the God of light, the eternal Yahweh Puta, the Quexel of all of the ancient universe. And as he comes riding in, he brings your relatives and he brings your ancient family, joins with you and says, these are my sons. And I'm going to tell you the last man of better judgment will be greater than anything that has preceded it. So again, we look at a continent bathed with blessings, smitten over the periods of time, lashed by the sky, or carrying the weight of ice ages, as did the European continent, and carrying the patterns of antediluvian history, wiped out by passing scourges, but never a full end. No wonder, then, we can turn again with Jeremiah to read his words. Wildernesses swallowing up ancient cities, horsemen gone, civilizations wiped out. I beheld all these things even before 600,000 years ago. And now the history of the records of the replanting, and now the sending forth of the Adamic household, and the building of a kingdom, the seduction of a race, the fall of man, the raising of this mankind, the elevating of his sons, until today your white Christian civilization marked you as the sons of the eternal God of light, the he who lights every man that cometh into the world. Thine they were in the heavens, mine they are on the earth, Jesus said, and no man can ascend back into the heavens but they that came down out of it. I think it's a significant thing that we understand this great pattern of our destiny. Yes, we found our way back. Our forebears were moved to settle in this great land. They had spiritual drive, they had designs for freedom, but they were motivated by the destiny of purpose that brought them here. And these United States that emerged out of those colonies has risen to its position as the great land of the eagle again. The great symbol of God who said, I bear you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Truly, you who are the land, the outstretched wings of the eagle of the 18th chapter of Isaiah, a part of the household of God. We spoke to a reporter this afternoon, and he admitted that all the white nations were Christian. They were the half-nations. They're the superior nations on the earth. Now we tell you that there isn't any question that this is your destiny, to fight the darkness, to lift up the standards of light. And the great attempt to overwhelm God's kingdom is to envelop you and absorb you in a world government, to integrate your society, to break down your immigration laws, which are born of divine inspiration, and then to get you to accept all the processes of the darkness. But I haven't the time nor have you tonight to discuss this area. We are pointing out that this panorama of the ancient past ties in with the present, and its background tied in with upheavals and catastrophes, with movements in the sky and progressions and measures that have taken place that was thus observed. It's a rather interesting thing then to note that the prophecy that was given unto Enoch concerning the number and the signs and the measures of the sign of the Son of Man in the sky proved the absolute inspiration with which his sky had been exactly like that of the Mayan sky until we arrive at the day of the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens, which was exactly like your sky is today, showing again the inspiration behind that set of prophecy and the keen observation that your race had sowed the patterns of its experience into this ancient Central American civilization. Yes, across the steppes of our country race two types of tribes. White tribes who worship Manitou, the Great Spirit, that look for the embodiment of Manitou again as the Great Spirit. They did not have any fears of traditional hells or destructions. They only worshiped a Great Spirit and whose embodiment they recognized, and that they were his household and his children. There were the pagan tribes with a multitude of gods. There are 16 kinds of Asiatic religion found in the tribal life of Asiatic Indians in this country. And there is all the doctrines of the traditions of your race that come out of Israelitish background and the origin of your experience to be found among the white nations and among the Mohicans and the Delawares and the original basic Mohawks and the Senecas. And these are quite clear. So we point out that in this instance again, the testimony of tradition, the measure of time, the great moving pattern of inspiration hath borne testimony that the household of God not only will survive, but will out-survive whole civilizations and cultures that have disappeared because of violation of divine law. The grace of your God is sufficient. Though continents sank because of their catastrophe and their judgment, because they wouldn't migrate when they were given the warnings. And the celestial sons of God who came to their spirit temples were lifted from the earth, as the records of ancient Horus in Egypt said. And some of us migrated to get away from this land before it sank into the fire and the water. But others stayed to enjoy the pleasures of the violations of divine law and the laws of the new God. And so wrapped up in their pleasure, their vice, their immorality, and their transgression, that they stayed too long until they were swallowed up in it and went down in the catastrophe that developed an ancient continent that rocked an earth, that lifted mountain chains, and marked a new era from whence new creations were to find their place. And so we stand tonight in this great continent and realize that we are the household of God, and we can say, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And if you want to talk to me about my relatives, they better be the children of my father, and they better be members of the white race. I point out to you that this you must not let the Johnsons or the Ador Sherrys take away from you. Because now he's been appointed as one of the administrators. This ex-pro-commie of Hollywood is one of the administrators now in the fulfillment of civil rights and race laws and suppressions. My friends, they follow a proper course. They go as far into the dregs of the socialist revolution as they can go to make the leaders to harass the people of God's kingdom. But let me tell you, it's about over. So in this instance, lift up your eyes to whence comes your strength. You who are the children of light, or the household of the sun, you are the children of the Most High God. We do not live with pagan sacrifice. We do not sacrifice our children upon the altars of pagan gods. But they have tried to arrive at a new procedure in which they want to sacrifice all your race to the violations of divine law, and then your sons on the fields of warfare whence you have no victories. But your father said, No, upon my sons shall come immortality, and upon the earth the fulfillment of that kingdom of which there shall be no end. I haven't the time to go any farther in this discussion tonight, but your tomorrows are a part of your yesterdays. And God, since he set you in the earth, has said, I will that you shall rise until, like the very symbol of the phoenix bird itself, like the very emblem of the living eagle, that you will ascend into the sunlight of the endless glory of the Most High. For you shall rule the earth, and this shall be its symbol. There is no doubt that this destiny is going to be fulfilled. And so let us tell it. We'll have more to say at later periods upon this subject. In fact, we anticipate that we will use one of these days slides of unprecedented splendor to show you the archaeological background of one of the most fascinating stories of a continent upon which you live. However, we're going to speak next Wednesday night in Lancaster in the Bible study, answering questions there. Do not forget the Wednesday night Bible study on schedule this week. We'll be Thursday in San Diego and Friday back here covering a blueprint of world events as they relate to biblical prophecy. Now, next Sunday afternoon, our subject, Can These Bones Live? This is our subject next Sunday afternoon. Can These Bones Live? Our subject next Sunday evening, again, is one that is contemporary with your hour, and it is a very vital part of the political pork barreling chicanery, but has within its factors even things infinitely more disastrous. But the real answer is not what it is. Our subject, can poverty be eliminated? This is our subject next Sunday evening. You know, we're going to have a war on poverty. Can poverty be eliminated? This is our subject next Sunday evening. And if it can, how? And you know, there's a lot of people that are poor and don't know it, because what they're poor in is the most vital asset that a man can have. But our subject, can poverty be eliminated, next Sunday evening, prophetic, significant, right down to the line. And don't take your eyes off the television screen when it's on that convention, because you may see some interesting things this week. You're going to see at least that there is no peace, even in the camp of the opposition, and that white men everywhere are rebelling against this thing. There's just one thing that convention has to come out and look at. There's a billboard that's almost 100 and some odd feet long on an arcade in front of the convention. They have to come out and say, you know down inside your heart that you should vote for Barry Goldwater. This is what it says. Now, don't say that this is what I told you to do. I'm just saying this is what the Democratic convention are told to do. And it just proves they didn't buy up the billboards. Now, there's something going on. I think one of the best speeches that has been made in the history of political campaigning was made to the Alabama delegation this week by none other than Governor Wallace. And I think you haven't finished hearing from him. He You won a victory this week. We tell you this in closing. The Congress passed in a small way a bill that clearly defines the Supreme Court and every other part of government better take their hands off the government of the states and not try to reapportion its legislatures or meddle its affairs. It's the first great restrictions against an appellate court in the history of our nation. Now we should just write another law and say, and you're not going to meddle with the First or Second Amendment. You're not going to make any law abridging the exercise of religion. And you're not going to restrict prayer or Bible reading in America. That's what we need to tell them, too. Of course, there's one way, either impeach them. If you don't hurry up, God's going to take them out as tares. Don't get torn up about it. All right, as we take your tithes and offerings tonight, we urge you, this has been a low month because of holidays and people traveling, vacation time, and we have additional expense. We never have needed your tithes and offerings any more than we need them tonight to help us in carrying out this project, in rolling out the tapes that must go out. And if someone likes to know how many tapes go out, come and see. They roll out by the thousands. Literally so. And as tapes come in by the 400 and 500 every week, and they're wiped, and they go out too. So you see, they don't stand still. They keep rolling, and they go on, and they go on, and they multiply. And then before the week is over, they're put into other tapes, and then the Friday tapes start rolling out. But where do they go? They go to the ends of the earth. They go all over your nation. They cross every denominational line. They're multiplied. They're reproduced. You're talking to more people than any missionary dollar ever reached before in history. So we urge you with your tithes, your offerings, to hold up our hands in helping to carry out this area of reaching people with truth in this vital hour. And there is one thing you can't make a law against, and that's thus saith the Lord. You may not like it, but there's nothing you can do. Even Ahab couldn't do anything to Elijah in the face of divine protection. So with your tithes, your offerings, your faith, let's reach people with truth. Do not forget XCRB 1090 on the dial, the voice of truth on the air every day at 9:15, and these services. Almighty and eternal Father, invoke thy blessing to rest upon this congregation. Bless this offering. Multiply it to carry forward the gospel of thy kingdom and the work of thy church. Supply the need of this people and bless them for their stewardship. In thy name we ask it. Amen.